Hey, grandkids, welcome to OPA 31. This is Kevin. With me, as usual, is Ken. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I cannot argue. It's been a week of moving things along in the wedding department, so that was kind of nice.
Oh, yeah. My suit came in, but I haven't had a chance to pick it up yet, but I guess I still have time.
Yes. Lots of months ahead. We still have the road to WrestleMania is going to happen before it. SummerSlam is going to happen before it. Well, actually, Money in the Bank, which will be here in Columbus, Ohio, will be prior to my wedding, actually.
Money in the Bank. Now, I'm not that familiar with wrestling. This is a pay-per-view, I assume?
Yes, sirree.
So What is the theme that they call it Money in the Bank?
Well, they have a ladder match. in the briefcase, the contestants win the chance to grant themselves a title shot at the WWE title at any time.
Wow. So they could
And most people are very advantageous in their use of it. They pick someone who is down and out, someone that may have been attacked by a real hatred opponent at the time. And they come in and cash in, they do their finisher, and they get a quick victory, is generally the way that it works. And, Dolph Ziggler did that last year, my boy from Kent State. Everyone went bananas for him. It was the day after WrestleMania. It was the Raw after WrestleMania. And, he cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase against Alberto Del Rio and won. Because they still had the split championships. Then where there's a Raw and a SmackDown title, basically. There's the WWE title and the world title.
Right, gotcha.
So they've since combined them. Well, actually, and I might be thinking of a couple of years ago now, actually. Yeah, I'm thinking a couple of years ago.
Well, So this will be, they will get the proverbial Money in the Bank in Columbus, Ohio, is what you're saying.
Yes.
I don't know, proverbial, is that right? I think I meant to say
actual.
Actual? Well, it's not really money in the bank, though, is it?
No, there are no monies to be had.
Yes.
Unless you count the royalties that they occasionally talk about the champions having. You know, they're the top money drawer or things of that nature. They don't go to that well all that often these days. They used to go to that well far more often in the days when we were children.
Oh, they would go into more of like the business aspect of it?
Well, without being the business aspect of it. Just they'd make more about the fact that the title holders made more money. Because they tended to dress nicer and act nicer so that they could talk down to certain persons.
Oh, okay. So it's a class thing there, almost.
Yeah, they had a little class thing going on, I think.
I gotcha. So, let's see. Well, that's something to look forward to.
Well, you know what? You could call the archer that we just watched, Lars Anderson.
Yes.
You could call him Money in the Bank.
Today's first topic, yes.
Yeah, you could. I would say he's Money in the Bank when it comes to archery.
You could say that for sure. If you would want to use that kind of expression to refer to someone who is an archer, then yes.
Yeah, the article that we happened to read called him a badass archer.
A badass archer. That's pretty good, I think. I mean, I don't know. He does some things with the bow and arrow that I find almost unbelievable. I'm sure that these shots took multiple takes. I mean, I guess it's like any kind of trick shot video you're going to see, but still, he had to do these things, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But some of them, he fired multiple arrows into moving targets within a very short time period.
That's true.
Like, even to do it once is pretty ridiculous. So, and this guy, he actually looked back on how archery used to be in wartime. And they even showed different graphics from, there were Egyptian graphics, like hieroglyphs that had archers using some of his techniques. And there were some Japanese paintings that they had in there.
Right.
That had these techniques that he was using. So they weren't, like, he really researched this technique to get it down, because it's completely different than modern archery.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess putting the arrow on the opposite side of the bow when you're drawing the shaft, it seems like we're talking about Deflategate here or something.
No, we will get around to, we will shoot our arrows into Deflategate later.
Boom. So, yeah, he would basically have that on the opposite side of the arrow when he's firing. And that lets him hold multiple arrows in his firing hand and basically just notch them up one after the other. Which, you know, it seems like that would be difficult to, you know, train your fingers to hold it that way. But I don't know.
Yeah, and it does make sense. Like, they talked about how he needed to retrain himself. Like, if that was the technique back then, it would be a lot easier to pick up because you wouldn't think of it another way. Like, from what the... they didn't... I'm not sure if they outright said it, that he was a regular archer. Because they did say he had to retrain himself, but I don't know how much...
I'm sure he started out doing it the way everybody else does, you know.
Right, and yeah. I just wonder how many years he did it that way, like, because they didn't really mention that, but they did mention that he had to retrain himself, and it took years. Like, they didn't really say how many years, I don't feel like.
No, I was noticing on the video, he kind of goes into some more detail in the comments of the YouTube video. I saw that it took 14 takes to get that final shot where he shoots the incoming arrow.
That is unsurprising. Just to do that once is pretty ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. I would say it's worth your time. It's maybe a 6-minute video.
Yeah. It's a little over amazing. 6 minutes. It was unbelievable what that guy could do. It really was. Like, that technique is really interesting, but I do understand why people do it the way they do it now, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just going to be standing still and firing at a target, then it doesn't really... You don't have to go through all that to, like, be able to fire off, you know, 3 arrows and...
into your deer.
In, like, 1 second, you know. But if you were, you know, a professional... archer or hunter, you know, or like soldier, I guess, then back in the day before guns, that would be, you know, a pretty cool thing to be able to do. Because right. Like, they showed examples of him, like, at close range, even, like, shooting people with arrows. Or, well, not people. God. Yeah, he was just killing people.
He was shooting people right in the face.
It's like he shot these 2 people in the eye. They were both just sitting there at the table.
Things escalated quickly.
No, there was various silhouetted targets and
dummies
and
of
things
that, like that. That nature.
Yeah. But he was, and you know what? What I happen to think about, and I think they did show some pictures of, famously, the Mongols were supposed to be expert horsemen and archers.
Oh.
And they were talking about some of the historical texts that said that good archers supposedly could fire off, you know, arrows, I don't know if they said three in a sec, you know, like 10 seconds, three in like 3 seconds, maybe, whatever it was.
Right.
And it seemed like crazy. But then if you watch him do it, he does, you know, he's able to do that. He actually at one point jumped in the air and like fired
three arrows in 0.6 seconds, like, before I think
he hit the ground. Yeah. So yeah, three arrows within a second, I think, is what the text said. And you can imagine if before a period where you had guns, like these horsemen coming at you, you know, like,
raining down that many arrows,
and like just being able to like move so quickly and fire so quickly, like I can understand why they are, and they just had brutal tactics, which you know, like it was kind of like psychological warfare in a way. But
yeah, there's a reason they conquered a whole lot of territory.
Yeah, so that would have been pretty scary to see, like an army of people firing like him, if you could imagine.
Yeah, that would have been pretty intimidating.
It's like machine guns almost, you know. That's how fast this guy was firing.
Oh, because he even showed it, because they were saying that he didn't feel like he had enough power of what they would have had back then. From a technique standpoint, but he could still break chainmail and like a heavy coat underneath it with mm-hmm. one of his own shots.
Right.
So like he felt that their technique back in the past would have been better than his.
Yeah. And it may have been, you know, on the flimsy end of chainmail. I don't know. When I was looking at it, it didn't seem like it was,
it looked like it might have been used before.
Yeah, I don't know. It was secondhand chainmail. But, you know, I think that's fine. It was pretty amazing in general. And I guess it kind of, like, makes you rethink about kind of the ancient archer. Like, I guess I have to admit I've thought of Legolas when I was watching parts of that. Where he was, you know, grabbing arrows out of the air and firing them back at people and things like that.
Well, yeah, and that's why it said it destroys every Hollywood myth, and I'm like, you know...
Except it basically proves the existence of elves.
Yeah, it does prove the existence of elves.
We have it on film. Definite proof.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to examine Legolas's technique.
Oh,
and see if he fires on the right hand side. Maybe that should be something we check for.
You know what though? I think they did show a picture of him. Come to think of it, and it was on the wrong side. And he did, he used a quiver, which this guy said was kind of BS. Because it's, although he did end up using like a hip quiver, I think.
Yeah, they still had something. Like, it was the back quiver that was more of the BS. Like,
yeah.
It just rattled around too much.
And, like, fell over.
Yeah, and fell over and swung in front of you when you were trying to run.
Arrows fell out, yeah.
Yeah, arrows fell out.
Although, he didn't look like he was trying too hard. It was kind of like one of those, infomercials where the people are like trying to do things the old-fashioned way
and like, oh, and showing like how tough it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look at this impossible back quiver.
He's just trying to sell the bad back quiver.
yeah, he's really he has a monopoly on making these hip quivers, so he's really trying to get people to go for that.
He's got a good PR campaign for himself.
Yeah, I mean, he spent all this time to learn how to art, you know, shoot all these arrows and things just to get this YouTube video out there for his hip quiver company. I mean, he's dedicated. If he works half as hard as he did at this video on his company and making hip quivers, then I got to think that they're quality, you know?
Yeah, he could be on TLC next.
That's true.
He's got a show right there with Duck Dynasty. I think they could go back to back.
You mean the Ladies' Corner?
The Ladies' Corner.
TLC?
Oh. Well.
Oh, I guess we're actually not going to have a Ladies' Corner this week.
I don't know. You never know. Yeah. She still may join us.
It could happen, I suppose.
But we're not going to let you down.
No, thank you.
And you know what? We're not going to let you down by talking about Balghazi again.
My favorite topic comes back. The second week.
Yeah, that was funny. I specifically posted this on Friday. I'm like, there's no way this shit is still going to be going on by the time next week rolls around. And I'm like, why is that? I do feel like in the last couple of days, it's been more about Marshawn Lynch and his Skittles. And Marshawn Lynch getting fined for wearing an inappropriate hat at Media Day. So I do feel like Monday, Tuesday were the last 2 days of Balghazi. It did stretch into this week, which is, that story had some legs.
I had a feeling because it really came in at a good time because it's like that off week before the Super Bowl. Like, there's not really a lot of news going on. So, like, people are looking to write stories about something, you know? And it just came on a silver platter there for him.
Yeah, and again, one of the reasons I thought that it would be dead was that, you know, by the end of the week, it's just like, okay, we can move on to talking about the Super Bowl.
Right. Oh, yeah, there is the Super Bowl.
I didn't think it would stretch into Monday, Tuesday. Like, I'm like, oh, my gosh.
I did see an article today that was like, the deflated balls do not explain, what was it, a 45-7 victory over the Colts?
Well, and that's been out there the whole time.
But I feel like this was like, okay, guys, look, that was fun for a while.
Let's just cut the bullshit, finally. Let's move on along here.
Yeah, there is actually a football game to be played, and I think, you know, it maybe didn't make that much of a difference. And one of the things that I forwarded to you earlier this week, and the ground seems to have shifted on this one, was that post, I forget the guy's name now, Shear, I want to say? What's his last, Max Shear, maybe?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up here, 1 second.
Kevin's going to verify here.
Warren Sharp.
Warren Sharp. Oh, that's close, huh? I got the SH.
Just that close.
Oh, so close.
Yeah, so he wrote a lengthy article on the fact that the Patriots' fumble rate was a very high anomaly.
Right. Like, it was... It did remind me, and I think that this was referenced in the 538 article that came out later in the week.
Right.
It did remind me of seeing, like, the statistics we saw for Lionel Messi playing soccer, like, how he's kind of, like, off the charts in terms of a lot of these offensive, you know, statistics.
Right.
The New England Patriots, according to Mr. Sharp. were Warren Sharp. He said that they were hardly ever fumbled the ball, especially compared to other outdoor teams.
Right. And he kind of kept on looking at it from different angles. And kept the article rolling with several charts. And it was just like, wow, that's pretty crazy. I was like, maybe that's helped, you know, hold on to the ball a little bit more. The little bit less air in there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about that for a while. I was like, well, how does that actually help you? I guess you can get a better grip on it. Is that the idea?
Well, that's the idea. But again, I just remember Rich Eisen saying that he couldn't really tell the difference in the ball pressure between the between what it's supposed to be, the 13.5 and the like 11 that it was supposed to be for the Patriots.
Well, the other thing was
so I, you know, maybe an athlete can tell the difference just because they're stronger than Rich Eisen.
Or it could be something that makes like a small difference, but when you, you know, take it out over 5 years, you can see there's a cumulative effect or something like that.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I thought was at play here. It's like, oh, maybe it's because if you fumble at a lesser rate, you know, it just kind of ends up adding up where you just...
Yeah, and things were a little fuzzy with me on that, I think. You know, it's like, I'm not 100% sure, but it felt like, okay, maybe there's something there. Like, it kind of, like, made me... To be honest with you, I kind of, like, got a glint in my eyes a little bit. Because I was like, this is it. This proves it. It ever since 2007, Brady's been doctoring his balls.
Yeah, but, Brady does like to talk about balls.
Oh, my gosh. And I think you saw that video, the supercut of... Tom Brady talking about his balls.
No, I didn't actually see any of it. I have honestly... this whole thing, again, is so ridiculous. Like, you know how he said people are like, okay, move on along? Like, I was like, oh, come on, man. Just let this thing die. Like, there is no reason for this to be this crazy. Like, again, like, I enjoyed it because it's the Patriots fans having... to defend themselves. That amuses me.
Yeah.
But the story in and of itself, I was just like, oh my gosh. And it was kind of interesting. I was just looking through my Twitter timeline, and I saw someone with a rebuttal. And I thought I was walking into an article with just one person's rebuttal on it. But it was like six people looking at his data and telling him that he was wrong.
Yeah, there was quite a few rebuttals going on there. But, you know, they brought up good points. Like he, I guess, made some assumptions like the... distribution of fumbles should be, you know, even across the league, and it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, like they said, that there's maybe not a great, you know, maybe there's not a very good chance that this would happen to the Patriots, but like there's a decent chance that this could happen to some team, you know, like just from a random, you know, luck of things.
Right.
So I guess you could say that this means that the Patriots are lucky, which I would argue it does play a factor, and maybe especially some of their earlier Super Bowls. I felt like those runs, they got lucky at some points. At least that's what I feel.
Well, it will be interesting because this is their sixth Super Bowl and they've lost the last two.
So they could be looking at 500 here.
Yeah, they could be looking at 500, which just completely changes the... I mean, it's pretty incredible just to be able to get them there that often.
Would they be knocking on the door for, like, tying the record for most Super Bowls lost? Didn't the Bills lose four back in the 90s?
Yeah, they'd be in both categories. They'd be close to both categories.
That's kind of impressive, I guess, in a way.
And I forgot that they did have, those two, losses, because I forget who was talking about those, because the, Patriots are actually 3-4 in the Super Bowl, because they lost to the Bears in 85.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to think. They went with, what's his name? Drew Bledsoe when Bill Parcells was there and lost that Super Bowl. I can't remember which number that was.
Huh.
But that one was a while ago. I'd have to check here. But
yeah, I was just going to look up most Super Bowl losses, but... should have really had this one looked up ahead of time. I blame myself.
Yeah, you brought the topic up. Hurry up and search, 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 motherfucker.
All right, here we go. God damn it. Oh, hold on. I'm getting word that the Broncos have lost 5 Super Bowls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so pretty rough. Well, yeah, they'd be joining the Broncos then.
Oh, would they be?
Because, like I said, they lost twice, and they've... Well, they lost twice under different coaches, and then the Brady-Belichick combo would be 3-3, so that'd drag them down to 3-5.
Oh, my God, the Bills lost their 4 Super Bowls in a row.
Yes.
I forgot about that. Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, that hurts a lot.
The fourth one might be the worst, right? If you were a fan, which one do you think would be?
The first one hurts the most because that was the one that Norwood missed the somewhat easy field goal. It was their first one. Like, don't you just go, everything else could have been different if that goes in. Like, the next 3 years, maybe the next 3 years aren't as horrific as they were. You know, you get in that positive mindset, you win. Maybe they win 4 straight after that.
Wow.
That's it. That's what I'm going with.
All right. I hope somebody out there can write a alternate fiction novel where alternate history fiction where the Bills win that first Super Bowl. And we want to see what happens. I think, you know, we could be looking at a very different world here.
Yeah. Everyone's looking for that book. it's going to be a bestseller.
Somebody knocked on the door the other day at my house and they wanted to know if I had this book about the Bills winning the Super Bowl back in the 90s and kind of the ripple effect that
the butterfly effect
the butterfly effect on society as a whole, you know, kind of like a Bill and Ted kind of thing. Anyway,
I was trying to think of that set of books that you gave my ex-wife where, what was it, America was never conquered by the English or something like that. Oh,
wait a minute. That one.
Or the British never lost control of the U.S. I'm trying to think of what set of books that was. Alvin Maker.
Oh, yeah. That was like a fantasy one, too. Yeah, they threw in some fantasy alternate fiction because the Indians had magic powers and
else?
So did the settlers, actually. They had their, what did they call it, knacks. That was what their special kind of...
Oh, they just had different techniques.
Well, yeah. Like, people would have different, kind of... abilities or whatever, like a healer or a finder or whatever.
Okay.
And Alvin was a maker, which is like the best in the West.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's like a rare gift that, you know, one of those deals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. That happens with special powers.
Yeah, I want to say that was... Orson Scott Card that wrote that one?
I believe so.
Yeah, he also did Ender. Wait, what was that?
Yeah, Ender.
Ender's Game? Ender's Game, yeah. Which I still haven't seen that movie. Did you see that one?
No. I still haven't seen that. I was still too pissed that that they gave away the big shot, what is that movie with Bruce Willis where he's dead?
Die Hard.
No, where he's dead, you dick. Sixth Sense.
The one where he's dead, Die Hard.
Sixth Sense.
Oh, okay, the other one, Sixth Sense, okay, yeah.
Because, you know, the big thing in that, like, once you realized that he was dead, that movie became less impressive to me.
Yeah,
And I feel like I really like that book, and I really like that series, actually, because I know that I read Speaker of the Dead and the next book, because I know I read at least two books after Ender's Game.
Yeah.
In that series, at least.
And I saw that they came out with even ones beyond that, apparently, because I was at the bookstore and I saw some other book that I didn't recognize.
Yeah.
Saga.
I've realized it's gone further than I've read.
Yeah.
For sure.
I remember the one with the...
But they were all good books, but in some ways that first book takes on a whole different feel after you realize that...
spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert if you haven't read the book or watched the movie.
Oh, yeah. Cover your ears for about 30 seconds here.
That, you know, when you realize that he was actually leading armies, like, that was such a shock to me when I was reading the book. I'm like, holy fuck, like, I don't know why I didn't think about this, but
yeah. And it everything made sense, you know, when you figured that out. But I guess I'd have to go back again. I don't know. I think I did reread it a couple times, like when I first read it, but it's been a while. I would like to see that movie, though, just to see kind of how it is.
I'm disappointed in myself that I haven't seen the movie just to see it. Because it has been a while. Like, it's not going to be one of those things where I can really call the movie on how the book was. I remember enjoying the book quite a bit, but it has been a while since I read it. So
you'll be able to go in with an open mind and just sort of take it is what it is approach.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should check that one out at some point.
Oh, and somehow we got the Orson Scott Card.
Yes.
From Deflategate / Balghazi.
Yeah,
in its many responses.
Yeah, so I guess basically it's far from certain that the fumbles have anything to do. Oh, the other thing I was thinking of is, like,
well, they just, the one article said that just a lot of the numbers were wrong and the Patriots really weren't that lucky.
Yeah, it wasn't
as skewed as he said.
Right, right.
And I kind of, in some ways, disagreed with their assessment, one of the assessments that they're like, oh, well, we love the anomalies in sports. And it's just like, you've got to think, just like with the home runs in the steroid era of baseball, that you're just like, I don't know if anyone's going to get those. And same thing in hockey. There's no way anybody is going to catch up to, like, Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky, because they were scoring, like, more than twice the points that the top players are scoring now.
Wow.
In a season. So there's no way, like, even if they play longer careers, and Wayne Gretzky played for a lot of years. Lemieux did not.
I guess we're going to go up, getting a little off topic maybe, but, like, well, why do you think that is, that they were, has the defense become more important, you think?
Yes. Yeah, everyone says the defense was kind of disregarded in that era.
Oh, okay. So, like, they weren't as physical, you think?
I don't know about that.
They weren't as skilled?
Yeah. The skill might have been there for some guys and not for others. There were still more thugs back there, more fighting.
That's such an interesting concept to me. I mean,
it was just a different era of hockey, and it was pretty wide open. But then everyone's like, oh, if we prevent goals, we can win more often. And it's just easier to teach defense techniques, too, than it is to teach offensive techniques.
Oh, yeah?
Well, that's what everyone seems to believe, and that I read a lot. So, and in some ways I do understand that. You've got to have certain offensive instincts Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I like the guys that will plant themselves in front of the net at a hockey game and just kind of take a beating in front by the goalie and by the defenseman that's on him, hitting them, to just stand there just to be a screen and maybe get a garbage goal every now and again. I like that guy. No matter what team he's on. And I do love that the Penguins finally have one of those guys again in Patrick Hornquist. But Tomas Holmstrom is one from the Detroit Red Wings in the past. Well, presently, but his heyday was in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting how you have kind of different roles in different sports and kind of different norms of like what is acceptable and what's normal behavior. Like, you, for example, in hockey, famously, you're allowed to, I don't know, allowed, but it certainly was somewhat allowed to people to fight at points in hockey's history. I don't know if still today as much. Would you say?
I've still seen some fights this season.
Yeah.
There's less than there was in that time period that I'm talking about all the scoring happening.
Now, you're definitely not allowed to in football.
No.
Yeah.
That is frowned upon. There has not been fighting in football for a while.
Maybe back in the oldie days, but...
Right.
Not recently. A sport you wouldn't think to... there'd be a lot of fighting in would be tennis either, you know. And this brings me to a story that I
tennis
just tennis anyone. I don't know if you had seen this story about Rafael Nadal. I think they were playing in the Australian Open.
Yes,
and
that is going on currently.
Okay, he was playing an American named Smicek, who was really the underdog playing against Rafael Nadal,
right,
who apparently was not feeling well. And it was a close game. Like, it went down to the final set, right? And it's like a pivotal moment here in the game. And Nadal serves, and like right as he is serving, someone like yells really loud from the crowd. And his serve, like, goes, you know, way over. You know, obviously he was startled by the noise, which in tennis you're supposed to be quiet, which I guess is another difference, you know, between another sport.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Golf and tennis have the quiet.
Right. Or I guess bowling? Are you supposed to be quiet in bowling?
Yeah, you're supposed to be quiet in bowling.
Yeah.
If you call that...
Come on, you gotta call that. What are you saying?
I'm calling it a skill.
Oh boy.
When there's no defense, it's a skill. Golf is a skill. It is a very tough skill to master. And you have got to be an athlete to do that because of the dedication that requires. But I do not feel like golf is a sport per se,
but you are competing against other players. I mean,
yeah,
so I don't know, the best defense is a good offense, you know. Anyway, in tennis, you're supposed to, like, the crowd's not supposed to yell out during a point,
right?
So the Smicek, the guy from the American guy who served, who benefited from this, signaled to the umpire that he should have two serves. And so they gave him his first serve back because of the outburst.
Right.
And everybody has been kind of like talking about that and how good sportsmanship that was, like, to, like, in a big game, at a big moment, to, like, kind of like be, you know, honest and saying, like, you know, that was, you know, wrong there. Should get another chance.
Right. Yeah. That is pretty nice of him. Was he the one that ended up upsetting Nadal, though?
No, that was somebody else that beat him here. It must have been pretty recently.
Okay.
But I think it was another underdog he lost to. Seems like Nadal's maybe.
Well, yeah, he's near the top of the food chain. I don't know numbers exactly. I kind of half pay attention to tennis these days.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just thought it was interesting, and I couldn't really think of another sport where you would have somebody do that. Like, it seems like a uniquely tennis thing to me.
Yeah, you're in a football game, you're definitely not going to go, "Oh, dude, that so was not holding."
Wait, that was a first down. Come on, ref. I mean, give it to him. That was a bad spot. But you could imagine, I guess, a version of football where people did that. I mean, could you?
Well, if they wanted to, yes. I mean, it's possible. There are some calls that I believe are questionable. You could either do questionable calls or go, "Dude, I can't believe we got away with that one." Like, just a holding call. Like, you're like, "Wow, man, we really got away with that one. Do you mind if we take the gain, but we go back 10 yards?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess, I think, and maybe it's just because tennis, like, it's more of a tradition of, like, you're kind of making the calls, at least, like, at a lot of levels, like, you're the one who says if, you know, the ball's in or out, like, you're kind of trusting each other, I guess, like, when you're playing tennis with somebody else.
Right.
But, and the idea is that you're supposed to be honest. But
there's always been a bit of a gentleman's game to tennis, in my opinion.
You really, there was some kind of hand gesture involved there when you said gentleman's game. I'm not sure what you were implying there.
It's a
you know I played tennis in high school.
I do know that you played tennis in high school, and I practiced with you a couple of times. Cause what was the name of that part? Geesey?
Geesey. Yeah, we used to call that Geesey Woods up there in Altoona.
Okay.
Yeah, on that, it's like at the top of that big hill.
Right.
In Altoona. Yeah.
Yeah, I went up in feel a little bit like Tom Brady. We hit balls together.
Yes, we did. We took the balls. We grabbed them. Swung at them. And kind of batted them back and forth.
Yeah, we batted the balls up and down, to and fro.
Well, yeah.
And sometimes even into each other.
Yeah. I remember, did I hit you with the ball?
It's quite possible. You were certainly better at tennis than myself.
I guess I know I injured you playing hockey with my stick inadvertently.
Yes, you did clip me once.
I'm glad I didn't do that while we were playing tennis, so that's good.
Yes, that would have been a lot less gentlemanly if you would have clipped me with a tennis racket.
Although you do get, you do lose the point if you get hit with the ball in tennis, which is kind of a strange rule, I think. You're not really supposed to, like, hit at somebody, but if you do, then, and they get hit with the ball, then you get the point. So, it's a ungentlemanly rule, if you really think about it. But, yeah, I guess, maybe in baseball, do you think there's anything like that in baseball? Is there a wholesome aura around baseball that no, because you're just, like, cheating in baseball. Like, it's like...
Well, and there's even hitting people.
They're stealing. Like, yeah.
Well, the hit batsman is really the best example. Mm-hmm. Because if one team hits the other team's best player, it's like, well, okay, next time your dude comes up, he's getting plunked.
Do you feel like that's been on the wane, though, somewhat? Like,
they're trying to put the clamps down on that.
Yeah.
More and more. But it's still happening because the Pirates have felt like they've been the aggrieved party more times than not with the Reds.
A little bad blood there.
Yeah, a little bad blood. going on.
That's a shame. But, you know, why can't these OPA teams just get along? I don't know.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Exactly. Speaking of being friends, I mean, I don't think one thing that I would probably not want to be friends with is a Titan from the TV show Attack on Titan.
Yes, Ken definitely wins segue of the week. I think you had two roaring successes.
Thank you.
These last two, you've got the title.
You know, I would like to say I just couldn't have done it without you. Thanks for being there for me. I'd like to thank my wife, my family, my pug, Preston. This is really great. Oh, they're playing the music. Sorry, I gotta go.
I probably would not have watched this show without your aid. So I do have to thank you. I neglected to record it on Adult Swim, I believe, is where this one airs. Anime block on Saturday nights.
I don't know if it's that or if it's just their like weekday night, like evenings. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
When they have it on.
But, yeah, because I remember they used to do Saturday nights for all their animes. But anywho, we've been watching it on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, so if you got that, check it out. Attack on Titan. It started out as a Japanese manga, moved over to the anime. And I don't know, how would you describe it? It's kind of disturbing.
The beginning of it, when I saw the opening credits, made me question why I should be worried for these people when these titans attack. Now, there are these people that are 40...
What is a titan?
Yeah, what is a titan? It's a 40-foot-tall, 40-some-odd-foot-tall... well, they vary in height, I guess. It should be the... There are smaller ones that are like 20 some odd foot. I think the like low 10. End is like, oh, is it 10?
I think that's because some of them were inside the building there, that one part. So yeah, I would say that some of them are even like down to 10 feet, which is still pretty tall. I don't know if you would call that a Titan under most circumstances, but it's getting up there.
Right. And there are some other ones that are much taller.
Right. There's like the, what do they call that one?
Like the Mega Titan or something.
Giant Titan? I don't know. It's something like that, yeah. Colossal Titan.
That's Colossal it. Titan.
But it's kind of like a strange setting because these are like kind of zombie-ish Titans. These Titans, they're not intelligent. They
just want to eat people.
But not for any sustenance or anything.
Right, they can live, they regenerate themselves.
Right, and they're giants, by the way, too.
Yeah, and they're giants, and they can only be killed if you cut out the nape of their neck.
Yeah, so they've got, like, these specialized sword things that they use, and...
These utility belts that... shoot off with steam power or something of the some type of air canister.
I don't know if it runs on gas or what.
Yeah, because they make some reference that it is powered,
right?
Because they run out of power from time to time.
Yeah, it like shoots out these kind of grappling hooks that basically seem to be able to dig into anything, be it a building or a Titan. So they can kind of swing themselves around and attack their weak spots. But basically, all of humanity is reduced to living within this walled state, almost?
Yeah, they don't really say how large it is. And really, at the point that we're at, which was episode 10, they haven't... there are several walls... And it seems like they've penetrated, the Titans have penetrated the outermost wall and are going to the second wall and trying to destroy it.
Yes. So they're kind of like, there's these concentric walls.
Yeah, and it seems like there are two or three more inside of the one that is currently under siege.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of a wild scenario to start with.
Yeah, it's very apocalyptic because humanity has been reduced to living in some relatively small amount of space on Earth.
Within these walls.
Yeah, within these walls.
And, yeah, outside these Titans are just running around and apparently never die, it seems like. And they somehow get energy, you know, without having to eat because they really only eat people. And
Yeah, and then they just do that for kicks.
It seems like, yeah.
Because no one's ever really been able to analyze them since they don't talk.
Right, yeah. It's a pretty weird scenario. Because it does add, you know, remind you a little bit of a Walking Dead kind of world almost, where there's like, they do kind of have a limited technology, I guess. But it is almost like a city-state, so they you know, at times it feels like it's a military, like an army movie or something, like a war movie, I guess you'd say.
Right.
Because like they're following these, you know, kids as they go through the training process and learn how to fight these Titans and learn what they're fighting. And, you know, I guess at times it might seem like it gets a little emo, maybe, if that's a problem for you. But
yeah, it's certainly you could argue that point.
But I think it's you know, they earn those moments. I think it's pretty intense action, I think, so it's not like they're flipping out over nothing, you know. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's there aren't that many people alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've made that pretty clear, too. And people, large villages of people keep on getting wiped out every time they break through one of these walls.
Right. Yeah. They
can. So
basically, the normal people are hopeless against these Titans because they don't have, like, there's not really a lot, like, guns basically are useless.
Yeah. And even the gun technology is pretty limited.
They do have these cannons, which sometimes help them out, it seems like. But yeah, even if you blast a hole in these things, that they'll get up and keep coming at you. So it's like,
yeah, again, they regenerate, so this is a bit of a problem.
This is a problem. So it is a pretty dark outlook, but you know, things start to look up as time goes on here. So
well, and the interesting thing is that because there's a dark outlook, you don't always think that it's going to be popular. But in the Universal Studios, Japan.
Oh, yeah. Was that actually what it was called? Universal Studios Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Yeah.
They have a 46 and a 49-foot statue of the protagonist fighting one of the enemies. And they also have a head where you can take a picture that you're one of the people getting eaten.
By this Titan, yeah.
By a Titan. Like, and it even had, like, drool marks in it, which I thought was quite a nice bit of artistry on their part.
Yeah, I mean, it looked just like the one from the first episode. I think the fans have called it the Smiling Titan. Yeah, they basically spared no detail from what I could see. It's a very disturbing creature, and it's just amazing to think that this is what people are like waiting in line for, to be eaten, and yeah, to be posed as being eaten by this thing too. So you're gonna go in its mouth.
Yeah, and it was a very long line that they showed in this video. So that it was very popular and people were dressed up. I enjoyed the people dressed up in the capes.
Oh.
Like they had the cloak and kind of the boots. They kind of had the military garb. Some of the kids
had
the military garb that's in the show.
Yeah.
So, obviously, if people are role-playing it, it's pretty popular.
Yeah, and it's, I think, catching on in this part of the world, too. So, people may have be already familiar with it. But if not, check it out on Netflix. I think it's, you know, it may at times seem a little slow, but it pays off. So, stick with it.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's worth getting into. It did take a couple of 3 or 4 episodes to really get rolling.
Yeah, that's true. Although I'll tell you, the first episode is pretty intense. So,
well, yeah, that's when you realize, like I said, like when I watched it, I saw that intro and I'm like, oh, these Titans don't stand a chance. And then you're like, holy shit. Now there's a problem. Like, you realize how dire the situation is as soon as that first episode starts.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of really... They start you out at, like, kind of the bleakest moment. Yeah, that's so far, at least. So, it does... if you can hang in there, it does go up from there. So, don't get too bummed out during the first episode.
Yeah, one of our not-so-bleak moments tonight was drinking, and now this is going to be hard to say because they spelled it wrong on purpose.
Right.
The Lucky Bastarded, or some type of saying like that from Stone Brewing.
Right, the makers of the Arrogant Bastard Ale. On this one, they chose to spell it incorrectly, but I think they were going for Lucky Bastard.
Yes.
That was their suggestion.
Yeah, because it says, drink it now, don't cellar, but they spell cellar C-E-L-A-L-R.
Oh.
And drink is D-R... D-I-R-N-K.
So I guess they're trying to get people not to save this one. Is this like a special edition or something, I think?
Yeah, and they do that with some of their beers. Some of them they say, yeah, go ahead, cellar it. And others they say, enjoy. Like, they have an enjoy by. So you're supposed to drink it by that date.
This one was just more insistent that you drink it now.
Yeah, they wanted to be drunk now.
So we, complied, and, yeah. It is very, hoppy, but I would say, not super, like, sour or bitter. So, if you're into IPA kind of stuff, go for it.
Yeah, maybe not my favorite from Stone, but it was still pretty tasty and pretty interesting. So, thank you for supplying, and, at DeFrango11, at Gozer33, at StuntGranny. Yeah, that's it for tonight.
All right, everybody. Take care. See you next week.